Welcome back for another helping of Oysters, Clams, and Cockles. I'm Ross Boland, joined today, as always, by my buddy, Mr. Barrett Dudley, to bring you the best TV shows and movies weekly in an easily digestible podcast packed with laughs. Barrett, how's it hanging today, partner?
Oh, boy. It's all right. The sun rose in the east.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to set in the west.
Indeed.
And, it's a big sky out there.
Huzzah.
Ross, it's like I always say, sure wouldn't want to meet the first man that tried to get a podcast off.
Dude, there are so many good quotes in this show in Yellowstone. You threw a couple of them out in our group in text.
Yeah, I mean, this, so obviously, like, we're going to get there, but
sure.
It is written with so much, like, flowery Western prose.
Yeah.
That is simultaneous, like, it's very on the nose. It's like, of course this show has a bunch of shit that sounds like it's out of the Lonesome Dove novel.
Uh-huh.
But it's pretty great, too. Like, it makes it, it kind of...
They're badass lines.
Yeah.
That make you go, oh, that's tight.
Yes.
Or make you think while you say, oh, that's real neat. That's real neat.
Yeah. So.
We're talking, of course, about Yellowstone.
That's right. I'm here today. I'm wearing yellow. I like yellow, but it doesn't look good on me, but I sometimes wear it anyways.
It's just one of those Britney Spears situations where somebody was like, wear a yellow shirt in the next podcast if you're being held captive and now you're wearing one.
No, it's not one of those situations. It's just like, I like the t-shirt and yellow also goes with the shorts that I'm wearing today.
Okay.
Which are like blue and white, you know?
You're yellow.
But I ain't no yellow bastard.
Okay. I'm just making sure.
It just washes you out. Look at me on screen up here. I'm all jaundicey.
You feel like you look less like normal skin tone right
now. Yeah, right.
Jaundicey. Well, that's not what you want.
It's definitely not what you want. That's so I apologize to all the people that are watching on youtube.com/BolandMedia.
I think you look great.
Thank you. Speaking of Yellowstone, right off top.
Mm.
So... we talked with our producer, Misha, after the show last week,
mm-hmm.
who has family that is part of First Nations. Did I just say Misha? Misha is another person that I want to talk about because she's the showrunner of Lovecraft Country.
Okay, yes, but Mariah Gossett.
Mariah, yes. Producer, God damn it. Sorry, I am so sorry, Mariah. Producer Mariah has family... who is part of First Nations.
Yes.
So she informed us after the show that it is indeed not ideal to call the reservations Indian reservations.
Right.
And really, you can just call them reservations, or you can say the actual tribe that the reservation. That inhabits the reservation. So a Sioux reservation or a First Nations reservation or, you know, so forth, so on and so forth. And then as far as describing the people... they are Native peoples, First Peoples, Indigenous peoples. But I, at one point, let a Natives slip. I just called them straight up Natives.
Right.
That's also a no-go.
Okay.
So mea culpa time for that one.
We're learning.
Apologies. But now we know. And I won't say that again. And just a little, that's my first such, actually. So,
you know what, Barrett, we're going to get right into tidbits and such here momentarily.
Oh boy, I sure can't wait. I just love talking about tidbits and such, looking up at that big sky.
Oh, of course.
Stars in the sky. Makes me think about this one time that I had to break a stallion. I didn't know whether to let a little spirit live on in him. But they'll treat you better if you kill the spirit.
Barrett and I, having grown up in Texas, in Houston, Texas in particular, and then Barrett having spent the last, 12 years in Austin?
Yeah, like 15 years
15
now.
Years
yeah.
at Austin, and I'm in a decade in January. You would be hard-pressed to find less ranch-type guys than you and I.
That's fair.
We've never really fucked much with the ranch life. We've always known people who own ranches. We've spent a good amount of time on ranches and around horses. And of course, one of our best friends, Everett, somehow had a property in Houston in the middle of where we lived on the west side of Houston that was fit for horses. And they had horses on their land. And you and I have spent plenty of time around actual ranch people and cowboys and such. But you and I couldn't be much further away from that realm ourselves. When's the last time you rode a horse?
Impossible to say. In fact, I don't even know if I've ever ridden a horse.
Ever?
I think I've been on the back of one, but man, I cannot.
You would know this shit.
Nah, well, what if I was like 5 years old?
Okay, that's,
Can 5 year olds ride horses?
I think so, yeah, but they just give you like a small one or something.
Yeah, right, right. If I was ever on the back of a horse, that
it was a
then.
Long time ago.
It was
ago.
A long ass time ago.
So mine was like, at one point I went to TBRM Ranch Camp in New Braunfels, and when I was probably 12 or 10. And I rode a horse then, and then I went until I was like 30. And when I went out to Montana, I rode horses. I rode a horse around around Montana. The horse's name is now slipping my mind, but we were best friends. It wasn't Colt 45. It was, what's the gun with special in it? 87 special or something? I mean, it's not going to be that far down on my Instagram. I
Magnum.
Can find it very quickly. It's definitely not Magnum, Barrett.
A 38 special?
38 special. I believe that's correct.
What type
of
gun is...
God,
you got me here.
What type of horse was he?
I know what you're saying. Gun called special.
Found him. 38 special.
It is
you
a 38 special. Okay, all right.
If you're watching on YouTube...
See,
here's,
I know my guns.
Here's a picture of me with my horse, 38 special.
Oh, wow. Look at that.
Look at the majesty on this boy here.
Boy, what a beaut.
Just a beautiful animal that I made... very good friends with, and that was the last time I went horseback riding, Barrett. And as you can see,
yeah, you're a natural.
I am a natural in the saddle.
Was it? What's that like? Like, is it unnerving to get on the back of a horse?
It's a little unnerving when you first jump on the back of a horse. For everybody who's listening who has never ridden a horse, if you don't have any experience with it, it feels weird. Because we drive around in cars, we ride bicycles, things that we control. Or we think we control anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Horse, it's you're on a wild animal.
Right.
You don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You got no experience. Plus, for men, we were built with these tools between our legs.
Betwixt our legs.
Yeah. Which on a horse is something that takes some getting used to.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get off, like that, the guy they made ride the horse until he broke it for like 40 hours
or
whatever.
They just duct tape his ass on there.
In episode 2 of Yellowstone, which we'll be discussing shortly.
Yeah.
When you get off, you kind of walk around like,
your
legs hurt, your inner thighs in particular, but your balls and your dick are never the same.
Yeah.
You become a horseman.
That's right.
And anyway, the point being, it's funny to me when we get to watch like this show, Yellowstone, that has all these incredible like cowboy vibes. And you and me are like, we're just not cowboys.
Yeah, I mean, we're not, yeah, no. I mean.
Just want to be clear about that. I have a hat on last episode. People could have been confused.
I usually describe myself as a very I'm a jack of all trades, really.
Sure.
Expert of none.
Uh-huh.
I always like both sides of almost everything.
Okay.
So like I think that the idealistic cowboy life, right, looks beautiful and a lot of fun. And I love the scenery, and I would go to a ranch and like partake in a
Ranch stuff.
Let me herd some cattle with you guys, right? Like I'll sit around the fire, pop off some guns.
Sure.
Drink some tequila, howl at the moon.
Whiskey, I think would have been my choice.
You know what I'm talking about?
Sure. Oh, I know.
But I also love the finer things in life. Uh-huh. And I'm like to get decked out and go to a fancy dinner and hang out in the city.
Yeah. And if I'm given the choice between
have a cocktail,
living the outdoor cowboy
get a massage.
Life. Yeah, I'm picking the latter.
Right, right. But both
I'm a
of
city
these
slicker.
Things
I'm
sound
a city
great.
Slicker.
Yeah, same. But all I'm saying is that I think for both of us, the life portrayed here, it's not unattractive.
No.
Neither of us are like, oh God, I can't even imagine.
No, for us it's romanticized heavily.
Sure.
Has been our entire lives.
Right. Right. So
And for those other states that have that cowboy sort of history to them, which there's only really a handful in the United States, they kind of get that. Then I wonder what it's like for people from, like, born and bred in, like, New York City or something who watch Yellowstone.
Right, right.
Because is there any connection for those people to this sort of romanticizing of the cowboy culture?
I imagine that it's far less.
Right, right. I'm trying to think of, like, what the example would be.
Now, clearly, the show is doing very well.
Yeah.
Which means that people from all over the country are watching it.
Well, and in all fairness, like with Succession, I've never had anything to do with finance or high business or like Wall Street culture, but
that's
I
fair.
Indeed love that show
right.
and the vibes. But then again, I've spent enough time around white people with money to where I have
exactly.
that connection
yeah.
to the
yes.
to that sort of family and that sort of lifestyle that is portrayed in Succession, and it makes sense to me. Whereas I get that the show's good no matter what. The Yellowstone is good no matter what. And I just wonder how much of a connection other people. So if you're one of our listeners who's from a state where there are no damn cowboys or cowboy culture or history of that sort or and such, I'd be very interested to hear how that impacts your viewing of Yellowstone.
Yeah, absolutely.
That being said, today we are opening with tidbits and such. Then we're talking about HBO's latest show, Lovecraft Country, Episode 2.
Mm-hmm.
Then we're on to Yellowstone Season 1, Episodes 2 and 3. So much good stuff to talk about today. But first, this episode of OCC is brought to you by Felix Gray Glasses. Barrett and I both constantly have our faces in screens from morning to night. There's no cutting back. Obviously, in 2020, we're all much more reliant on technology, on these screens that we possess to stay in touch with friends and family, to get our jobs done. And too much screen time can result in tired, dry eyes, headaches, blurry vision, trouble sleeping, all of these symptoms that I've dealt with since I was a young boy when I first had to get contact lenses and glasses. I have struggled with these things. Also living in the allergy capital of the world, Austin, Texas, my eyes become very frustrated by the end of the day, but not since I've been wearing Felix Gray blue light glasses. They launched in 2016 with the singular focus of offering the most effective computer glasses on the market with all the quality of brand name designer frames. They quickly became the internet's favorite blue light glasses, filtering out 90% of high energy blue light, eliminating 99% of the harsh glare coming from our screens. Every night now, pretty much, I'm live on twitch.tv/bossroland playing video games, and within 30 minutes to an hour of that first game, stream, whatever, I'm throwing on the Felix Grays because my eyes are tired and they need them. They help immensely with computer glare, with that blue light coming from your computer screens. And unlike other brands who use cheap blue light coatings that are ineffective and can chip or scratch, Felix Gray uses a proprietary blue light technology embedded directly into the lens. They have prescription, non-prescription, they've got readers. Felix Gray has you covered with optical glasses for work and sleep glasses in the evening that are clinically proven to increase melatonin secretion when worn leading up to bedtime. So why would you buy glasses from a company whose sole focus isn't making glasses? Trust Felix Gray because they make the best blue light glasses in the game. All you have to do is go to felixgrayglasses.com/OCC to get a pair of blue light glasses from the pros, and shipping and returns are totally free when you go to felixgrayglasses.com/OCC. One more time, that's felixgrayglasses.com/OCC. And now it is time for tidbits and such with Barrett. Hit us with the tid, the bits, and the such, sir.
Okay, so mostly I'm talking about movies today. You know,
we got
we got TV talk, so I'm going to go movies on the tids here. I watched for the first time. We joked last week about how I was going to ditch Disney Plus. It's definitely not happening.
I also have failed.
So on a Sunday morning, that's the best Saturday, Sunday morning. Those are the best times to like throw on a Disney movie. You know, get a little breakfast going. It's your lounge time, right?
You've seen it. You don't have to pay too close of attention.
So I watched one that I'd never seen before.
Mm.
I watched WALL-E for the first time.
WALL-E. Saw WALL-E in theaters. One of my faves.
Eva? So,
Made you happy, though, didn't it?
Yeah, WALL-E is a really nice, it's a nice, good film. Look, man, Pixar doesn't miss. That's the thing about them.
Not really.
It is also just pretty, it's a great one to go back and watch 12 years after it came out, because it, along with another movie, Mike Judge's Idiocracy from 2006, really, really, really like way ahead of their time, both of these films, in the way that they called out our like coming addiction to screens.
Ah.
So the plot of WALL-E is loosely that we have ruined the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
It is no longer life sustaining. It is nothing but a trash planet with nothing but trash towers.
It's just trash piled up everywhere.
And these little robots, WALL-E, which seemingly is the only one even left that works.
WALL-E
compacts all this trash. He builds towers and he lives his life and he collects fun things from the trash piles.
Yeah, makes the trash into squares. Piles them up.
But he picks out his favorite treasures.
Doodads and such.
He's lonely, obviously, right?
WALL-E.
Then this Eva bot droid comes down from the human spaceship way out wherever, finds WALL-E's little plant. It's found life. And so off we go to the human spaceship where all of the rest of human civilization is living. And everybody weighs like 500 pounds, and they're just carted around the entire spaceship.
They're in floating
lounge chairs.
Floating lounge chairs.
And there is never anything but a screen in front of them.
They never look up.
They do not look up. They don't look at each other. They don't touch each other. They're in nothing but a screen in front of them. The other piece that they got so right is that, like, the big head of the United States, essentially, of the world here, is not a president. He's the CEO of Big and Large, or whatever the company is called.
Right.
Which is basically just a, it's Amazon.
A giant corporation.
It's a giant corporation that advertises you things and sells you things.
Right.
So just the fact that the very first iPhone came out in 2007. Okay. So when they were making this movie, there was no iPhone.
What?
Because
it was 2008 that this film came out.
Right. And you know that these Pixar films take years to make.
Right. Tons of digitalizing.
The hours spent like on the animation and the
digitalization.
Digitization.
Digitization. Digitalization. The word is.
No, I think you got it right. No, not even going to try again.
Wally.
Wally. Eva.
That's the best part of the movie.
Lara.
Them talking.
Billy Costa.
But yes, the fat fucks in Wally are
so
hilarious.
So yeah, so I just, we barely had iPhones. This problem has only gotten worse. Just go look at the screen time on your Apple. Get yourself a pair of Felix Grays because your head is literally buried in screens hours a day or whatever.
All the fatties on the spaceship could have used Felix Grays.
And so I just thought that was cool that this movie from 12 years ago, really had it on the nose about how addicted we already were, and that problem has only gotten worse and in fact is even closer to what the movie portrays now than it was 12 years ago.
Dude, it is wild that sort of like, I saw it in theaters when I was at Texas State, and it's one of those, it's like, I remember the moment watching that sort of parody of our relationship with technology or whatever, and just being like, oh God, that is so unhealthy.
Yeah.
And then just watching it become more and more real.
Yeah.
To where, like, when, you know, obviously this isn't as much of a thing in 2020, but it used to be like last year, even walking around on South Congress where we record in Austin, Texas, most of the people you pass are looking down at their
heads
phones.
And phones. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Their necks are craned downward.
Yeah.
So, and this was one of the first places where you saw that sort of joke, like, of people never looking up from their screens. And it's hilarious, but also depressing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then obviously I would say that this movie, I don't think it was directly inspired by, but I feel like the creators of this movie had certainly were aware of Idiocracy, wanted to say some similar things, because in Mike Judge's Idiocracy from 2006, we're still living on Earth, but it is definitely a trash planet and everything is an advertisement. And like, you know, your couch is a toilet in this world.
Yeah.
So you don't even have to leave your couch to
make poo and pee.
Right. You're just constantly watching the TV, getting advertised to, everybody is a complete and utter idiot.
Yeah.
And so just two films, one that I had not seen, one that I had, that are, you know, kind of worth revisiting in 2020 because they were pretty prescient.
Considering our current circumstances and our relationships with technology and the like.
Yeah.
Indeed.
And I mean, look, man, that Amazon stock, it only goes up. They are well on, like, it's truly, now the piece of all, we're already in screen world. You know what I mean? Like, that's essentially, that's here.
Yes.
That's happening.
That is
our
happened.
Faces are buried in screens.
Yes.
But I like considering this, or at least, you know, thinking about analyzing critically this idea that, like, it's so not far-fetched that, like, Amazon is the government, essentially, one day. Like, carries more weight than the government does.
Right. Where you can see...
Is the leadership of the country.
Sure, sure.
Because they provide the things that the government can't, basically.
The most resources, like, to the country,
just,
yeah.
Think about our current predicament right now, where we're talking about defunding the USPS.
Right.
Which is just totally, totally crazy.
Yeah.
Like, you can't take the USPS away from people. It is the only reasonable shipping option. As somebody that sells a lot of stuff, like, online, right?
Right.
Like, stuff that cost me $5 to $8 to ship with USPS would cost me $20+ to ship with UPS or FedEx.
No shit.
Like, it is incredibly expensive to ship outside of USPS. So this is really damaging for small businesses and people that ship or get their medicine in the mail or like all these different things that people like rely on the USPS for affordable shipping. But who do you look who's been, you know, establishing a shipping system that gets you stuff in one freaking day?
Amazon.
That's all over the country.
Yeah.
Distribution centers everywhere, like able to provide this free shipping, right? So like, who do you think would step up in the absence of the USPS? Probably somebody like Amazon.
Yeah.
So it's just, you can already see this like the privatization of government, essentially.
Sure.
So it's just...
And we have plenty of different realms in our government already and in our current system in the United States that are privatized or partially privatized in some cases.
Or essentially bought and paid for.
Yes. And so, that's, which is a very strange element of, I mean, there's already so much corporate involvement with our government process that getting to a place where we see something like we see in WALL-E or in any of these other parodies of real life in the film, in the form of movies and film, it would be the least shocking thing ever if we got to a position where one of these major, 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 major biggest companies in the world was suddenly very heavily, even more so, intertwined with the American government or maybe another country's government, who knows, at some point. Crazy shit.
Yeah, okay. That wraps up that such.
Okay.
Let's bounce to one more tid or bit, whichever, here. Have you checked out this The Batman trailer?
I have watched the trailer.
Okay.
I've watched the trailer with Robert Pattinson as Bruce Wayne.
That's right. Now, we've been having some chats about this in the Discord, available to all members of the Mollusk Militia. I sent out a refresh link today, Tuesday.
Mm.
So that'll be good until Wednesday.
Tuesday, August 25th.
Yep. And
Patreon.com/oystersclamsclockles.
Jump on in there. We did have we've already had many new people join today. But we've been having a chat there about the Batman trailer.
Batman.
So give me an initial thought here.
I was concerned, more concerned going in to this The Batman project than I am now that I've watched and seen a trailer, because my issue with Batman tends to be like, all right, so what angle are you going to take? This has been redone, you know, a few times in our lifetime already. We've had probably 10 Batman movies come out, major Hollywood Batman films, since you and I were young children. I was obsessed with Batman as a kid, pre Jack Nicholson Joker, pre Michael Keaton Batman, just off the cartoons. My dad used to tell me Batman stories when he would put me to bed at night, like he would make them up about Batman. So Batman is a character and a franchise that I hold in very high esteem.
Sure.
Especially after what Christian Bale, Christopher Nolan, and Heath Ledger and everybody involved in The Dark Knight Rises, Batman Begins, what they were able to accomplish and sort of take everything in that franchise to another level. Obviously, I don't want anybody diminishing that, right? We already saw Ben Affleck take a swing.
Who, by the way, is also coming back to reprise Batman in another DC movie.
They've got to stop.
They are all, just as a quick aside, DC is now all in on this kind of like alternative strategy to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, where they are basically just like, anybody that wants to make a story that we like can just like have access to all these characters. So there can be
Joker.
Right. We can have Joaquin Phoenix's Joker, but there's also going to be Jokers in other movies that are not Joaquin Phoenix.
Right.
That role is not going to be carried over. There can be these different, really almost more like comic books, where there are kind of different iterations in series. So there's some movie coming out. I think it was announced that Ben Affleck is supposed to reprise the Batman role in the new Flash movie.
Ah. Yeah, you're right. Flash.
But we're also getting The Batman with Robert Pattinson as Batman.
Right.
It's interesting because it's different. And they're not like, I think it was a mistake for them to try to replicate what Marvel was doing anyways. Like, that was such a well thought out, considered, long process.
Very long play.
To get to Avengers Endgame, right? Like 25 movies.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just incredible foresight and patience there. And you can't just make that happen as a follower.
Right.
So this is actually like, it's at least more interesting that they're doing something a little bit different here. But to your point, you're right. We have gotten a lot of Batmans. one of the things that I started thinking about after watching this trailer is I actually think Batman is the most, I think it's the easiest to succeed with if you keep the nature of Batman dark. Like, the films that flailed were the ones that got really cheesy
and goofy
with Batman.
Yeah.
Like, Mr. Freeze.
Slapping nipples on him.
Slapping nipples on
making
him.
Making the villains weirdly comical and hilarious.
Yes.
It's like time to freeze.
Right. And it's like, I don't know if, I feel like that era, that was kind of like what they were thinking about was merchandise. They wanted to sell some action figures.
And I think also like making it comic booky and like that angle just didn't work.
Almost played off more off like the TV Batman.
Yeah.
Right? With the kapow and the boom and the bang and the punching and all that kind of hokey bullshit.
And bringing in Robin and in the way that they did and shit. It was all
but
in the...
Yeah. But the real... Like Tim Burton's Batman's good, man. And they were dark. Like Danny DeVito as Penguin is...
Very dark.
Is very gross and insane and dark.
And Nicholson's Joker was dark until Heath Ledger did Joker, and
Nicholson's
then now that looks like
Joker
a cartoon
was dark.
In
and
comparison.
Then, like even like they started to stray with Batman Forever, but Two-Face in that film, and who was Tommy Lee Jones?
Tommy Lee Jones is Two-Face,
and Jim Carrey's Riddler were still kind of creepier villains
for sure.
And then obviously we really lost the plot with the Clooney Batman and Robin.
That was a disaster.
But for the most part, like, I think if you keep this as like a gritty crime street drama,
then you're good.
You're pretty good.
And is that the impression you received from the Batman
That's
trailer?
Definitely the impression that I received from this trailer. And so, I said on the Discord, like, I get vibes of like Zack Snyder DC comic stuff, but I also get Christopher Nolan vibes here. So hopefully this swings way more Nolan-y and way less Snyder-y. Because Zack Snyder had his turn with this shit,
sure.
And it didn't really work out. So just give me like a good plot that just so happens to feature characters I know. The other thing that I think this film has going for it is Colin Farrell in an unrecognizable costume, prosthetic, and makeup getup as a very, very creepy looking penguin.
He's the Penguin.
That's Colin Farrell.
That man. That they showed.
Yes. The kind of gross-looking, balding, fat man.
With scarred-up face.
With scarred-up face. That's Colin Farrell. So I'm...
Whoa,
more, bro. More than anything, I am stoked to see Colin Farrell get a shot at a scary villain like this.
All right, look. Colin Farrell has been one of my favorite actors in the world since the movie In Bruges came out. All right? When I watched that... I was like, this dude is one of the top five male actors that we have alive in America today. And I've held to that ever since. True Detective season 2 was sort of like the next opportunity for Colin Farrell to take a step in the right direction, and it sort of went haywire.
Sure.
And things have not recovered to a place where like I felt like he was given the level of respect he deserves based on his abilities. Like the roles just haven't been there, or I don't know. But this transformation into a completely unrecognizable penguin in this trailer, which I'm now looking at screenshots of Penguin from the trailer.
Yeah.
And I mean, you literally can't even tell it's him.
Absolutely not.
And he's an unbelievably good character actor. So I think what that piece of it, very promising.
Yeah.
Indeed.
The part that gave me like the Nolan Joker vibes, especially, is just the very beginning of the trailer where you start hearing a sound. And about the second time you hear it, it's pretty recognizable what it is, and it's duct tape.
Mm-hmm.
And we then see a flash of a villain who is also unrecognizable, and is even unrecognizable compared to the character that it is playing, that is. Because that's Paul Dano as the Riddler.
Oh, shit. And, like, so I was trying to figure out who that dude was,
like the creepy
too.
Gas mask thing with duct taping somebody's face. So, again, like, I like the elements here.
One of the things that stood out to me as, okay, because what I'm looking for when I watch this trailer is, all right, what are the difference makers? What are the things that are going to make this stand out from other Batman attempts? Where's the angle? And it felt like, first of all, if you look up the Batman, just type in Batman Riddler trailer and pull up the trailer, teaser, photos, whatever, and you're just like, it's horrifying. Paul Dano is the dude from There Will Be Blood. What else has he been in? He was the preacher in There Will Be Blood that makes Daniel Plainview yell, "I've abandoned my boy! I've abandoned my child!"
He's in a lot of stuff, but he's very good. He's a character actor.
Another guy who's very, very, very good, and that you can see if he's given this dark villain to attack that you'd think he would succeed greatly in.
Yeah. Yes.
That combined with Robert Pattinson pummeling dude's face in the trailer in a way that involves like crunching noises and possibly death. Like, as my co-host on RBP was saying, like, I don't know if he killed that dude.
Right, right. No, then that's a great point. You watch that and you're immediately, like, what triggers there is that you, if you're familiar at all with Batman, you know that he doesn't kill people.
Doesn't kill people. It was a huge part of The Dark Knight where the Joker, Heath Ledger's yelling, "Hit me!" And he can't do it. He swerves the bike around him. He can't bring himself to make that that final jump to murder, to killing someone.
Yeah. And so this definitely looked, this gives you that, like, oh, shit.
Are they going to go
there?
Are they going to go darker than Christopher Nolan?
Right.
And then that's where you delve into some murky waters, because it's like, Barrett, once you have Batman killing people, then you have, well, does Batman use a gun? And the second you start playing around with the weapons, because that's always been one of the things, Batman doesn't use any deadly force. He just uses stuff to incapacitate and stop villains from doing their thing and try to capture them and get them arrested. So to watch him, they say, like, who are you or what are you or whatever, and he beats that dude to a living, into a pulp and says,
I'm vengeance.
Which he's doing that's another interesting aspect. It's like, which voice do you go with? Do you try to take it in another direction? Do you just do Christian Bale or somewhere in between? I don't know, but I got the impression from the Batman trailer that they are going to go even darker, and I think they probably looked at the success of The Dark Knight and Batman Begins and The Dark Knight Rises, and they looked at the success of Joker, which was a very, very dark and gritty film, and they've got Robert Pattinson, and they've got Colin Farrell, and they've got Paul Dano, and it's like, it feels like they're going for it.
Dude, here's a great question. Here's when we'll really know. Is this going to be an R-rated Batman?
That is a good question. Is it? Do we know yet?
No, I just Googled, and there are people are talking about it. The internet is abuzz at the possibility of an R-rated Batman.
Because we always go PG-13.
Right.
All the Dark Knight trilogy, PG-13.
Correct.
That is very interesting. All the way back to Michael Keaton in the late 80s, PG-13. So people are asking, will the 2021 Batman be rated R? Based on the trailer, wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah, yeah. This film also gets back to production next month. That's word on the street.
Right on.
So hopefully that all goes smoothly for them.
I made fun of the fact that Pattinson's Batman had on eye black.
Yeah, I was actually just not going to mention that because it's the one thing that Pattinson looks very emo right there.
The hair
is like a little long and floppy when that Pattinson coif.
And they're giving you the music that kind of makes you feel like they might bring some of those emo vibes, like, Gen Z vibes.
I got like that one, like the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man 3 thing.
You don't want that.
Worst movie
scene in the history of cinema, him walking down the street, fucking snapping and spinning and doing his emo thing.
So I was actually just ignoring that little tidbit and just, you know.
I'm going to give you some helpful, make you feel better about it then. Because I was making fun of it and people on Twitter were like, bro, Batman would always wear eye black. And
yeah,
like
the Christian Bale
Batman had on
totally,
eye black under his shit.
It blacks out the eyes.
His white ass face.
Yes.
Now.
So they all do that. We just don't ever see it.
We're never shown it.
Exactly.
And that what makes me feel like, all right, maybe he just got his mask kicked off right here or something. Who the fuck knows? But I'm not as concerned as I was when I just saw the trailer and went, God, they're doing emo Batman because it's Pattinson.
Yeah,
and that becomes a concern. But I think we're going to be okay there. I like the suit. I like the bat suit. I like the look.
How about the old muscle car as the bat car? Could be tight.
Yeah. I don't really give a fuck about the vehicles. They never fuck up the vehicles.
Okay. Yeah.
Or at least we never had like a vehicle issue in the last trilogy.
Right.
There's never a point where I was like, oh, God.
You think that's something that they would get right going forward? I don't think we're going to get any penile phallic Batmobiles again.
Trying some dumb silliness you can't jack up the Batmobile, man.
No.
No, but very interested to see what happens with the Batman in the first trailer.
Yeah, also
promising.
I need to see this dude without a shirt. Let me see Jack Pattinson.
Yeah, let's see what's going on there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The suit makes it look like he's fucking huge.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see how big he is.
Let's see how big you are, bro.
Yeah, take off your shirt, dude. What's your deal? Take off your shirt. Show us your body, bro.
Yeah. That'll wrap up tidbits and such.
All right. Well, that was fun.
Yeah.
Of course, as Barrett mentioned, if you want to get in on the Mollusk Militia, which is afforded 4 additional ad-free premium episodes of this show a month and access to the Mollusk Militia exclusive Discord, which is where we discuss all things OCC, patreon.com/oystersclamscockles. Support the show, and in exchange, you'll get 4 additional ad-free premium episodes of OCC each month if you join the Mollusk Militia, plus access to that Discord. Moving on. Lovecraft Country.
Yes.
Season 1, Episode 2 on HBO. Things began to get insane at the end of Episode 1 as we saw monsters jumping out of the woods and eating racist police officers, sometimes eating half of them, and then they turn into monsters themselves and eat their other friends, and it was chaos. And our characters all end up, Atticus, Letitia, and Uncle George, all end up in this mansion, right? Seemingly out in the middle of what's the name of the county he had to get to or whatever for that his dad wanted him to find as his birthright?
Arden.
Arden County?
I believe that's correct.
Indeed. And that's where episode 2 opens up. My first note and question for this episode was, racist wizards?
Yeah. I think that's right.
Do you have a very good feel for where we are through 2 episodes? Because I don't have that great of a feel.
So I liked this episode. I think the show is humming so far. What this episode, I think, taught me about the way that this TV series is going to proceed.
Misha Green's series, by the way.
Yes, this now is Misha Green. Now we can say Misha Green. Misha Green is the writer-producer. She's the showrunner here on Lovecraft Country.
Formerly, based on Matt Ruff's novel of the same name.
Right. And she was formerly best known as creator and executive producer of Underground, which was a historical drama on WGN about the Underground Railroad in the antebellum South. She's also written for other shows, Sons of Anarchy, I believe. So this is...
Love Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah, but she's the showrunner here on Lovecraft Country. And, yeah. So I wanted to mention her.
She wrote 1 episode of the FX original series, Sons of Anarchy.
Okay.
Oddly enough.
Yeah. But I believe was a staff writer.
She was also a producer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, so what I think Lovecraft Country is doing here, I think we're kind of getting a story a week. I think that all of these stories will be loosely tied together and have our main characters involved in each. But I definitely think that, like, I kind of expected, based on the end of the first episode and then most of the way through this one, that, like, these Braithwaite people, you know, that this order of whatever it was called.
Racist wizards.
Sons of Sons or something like that.
Uh-huh.
I kind of thought that this was going to be a recurring element of the show, right?
But do you not think it is?
No. So just like we kind of move past everything and get to the house in episode 1, and like we've kind of wrapped that first part, now we've like, I think we've wrapped this crazy racist wizard order, and now we're moving on down the road to the next thing, and we'll confront the issues there.
Okay.
But I believe, let me see here, I think I'm getting this right, but the book Lovecraft Country is kind of chaptered like that. Like it's not a totally linear, or it is linear, but it's not like one narrative from beginning to end.
Okay. I wrote a novel like that.
Yes, you did.
Where there was no connection between chapter to chapter.
The book consists here. I hate to just read off Wikipedia for you. But
I love reading off
Wikipedia. But the book consists of 8 interconnected stories, and they are called Lovecraft Country, Dreams of the Witch House, Abdullah's Book, Hippolyta Disturbs the Universe, Jekyll and Hyde Park, The Narrow House, Horus and the Devil Doll, The Mark of Cain. So my guess is that we're getting 8 episodes here, and they're based off of each of these stories.
I think we are getting 10 episodes.
10 episodes. Okay. Yeah. So maybe some of these take 1 or 2 episodes. Hmm. But that's certainly the vibe that I get after this house crumbles at the end, and we're there, and they all kind of pile in the car
and bounce.
So, but yeah, I got big Get Out vibes here in this episode.
Yeah,
it's not a surprise that Jordan Peele is an executive producer here. A lot of the same elements and just certainly just it just had the you know it had the feel of a bunch of racist people that are kind of they seem nice, right? They seem welcoming and friendly, but and then they have
they're conniving behind the scenes.
Yeah, and then they have these really sinister ulterior motives.
Yeah, that's fair. Whitey's on the Moon was the title of the episode. They also had an uptick in viewership.
Okay.
You want to see that. From week one to two, you want to see up.
Yes,
you don't want to see down. Down is bad. Lovecraft Country going up means people are talking about it. Word of mouth is the number one thing that can help shows like this have great, great, great success.
Yeah.
Okay, so to just kind of attack what happened in this episode, Atticus is the birthright of some order. How is he connected to the racist wizard order?
Okay, I didn't really follow all of that.
Okay, I don't know that we're supposed to all of the way.
Yes.
Because most of the stuff I've read about this show so far starts with whoever is writing the recap or review openly admitting that they're not quite certain what the hell is going on.
Yeah.
Which makes me think, well, okay, then I'm not as stupid as I thought I was. Because each of these episodes has ended, and I've been like, that was dope. But I'm going to be real with you. I don't know where the fuck they're taking this thing. Like, where are they going to go?
Right.
So it really does start to make sense when you frame it up as, like, these episodes might be more individual. It's like, take the story, enjoy the ride, remember it, and then just see if it ever connects to anything else.
Because
down the road, it might.
Yeah.
But right now, they're just sort of giving us all this shit.
Yeah, there was... Okay, yeah, and I'm trying to... Man... Yeah, okay, so, God, what a great podcast. Listen to Ross and I flail trying to figure out the plot of Lovecraft Country.
All right, what's happening here in this show we've been watching?
There's this big house, there's this order of wizards, the one main wizard who's now grandson or great-grandson is our guy who's having his rib taken out of his body.
And then fed to people.
And then fed to people. They are attempting to get to paradise. They want to get back to they're the Sons of Adam.
Sons of Adam.
Right? That's correct. That's the order.
Yes.
They want to get back to a paradise where everything is in its order, right? And you'd have to be pretty dull to not like read into things being in their place and things being in their natural order as to basically like white people are further up in the hierarchy than black people.
Right.
Right. Like
especially in the context of this show.
Yes, exactly. But were you reading those same vibes that I was?
Yeah, they just laid them on like real light.
Yes. Yeah.
It's not way in your face. Like, and what we mean by that is that we're sick of all these black people.
Right.
They're just like desiring this.
The natural order.
Yes.
Yeah. So there were certainly the undertones there. And yeah, somehow Atticus has a connection or a relation. Oh, I got it. It's his mom. It's his mom who was a servant slave.
Oh, yeah. Because that's who he chases out.
Of Headmaster Braithwaite.
She leads him out of the building.
Yes. So that's where it comes into play.
Okay.
So she mentioned how her masters were kind, I think.
Uh-huh.
And so I think that there was a potential relationship there, meaning that Atticus is a descendant of the original Braithwaite guy.
Which also comes up when Uncle George and Montrose being Atticus's father, I'm doing quotation marks
air quotes
here.
Because it's probably
and Uncle George is like, well, you know.
There was that one time.
Yeah, basically, Montrose is not Atticus's father.
Okay.
Is the impression we are given in this episode.
Yeah.
That there is something else there. And at first thought, I was like, oh shit, was it Uncle George that is actually Atticus's father? Because there's sort of that tension between the two men. But I think it's that it was one of these Braithwaites or one of these people she was working for that perhaps is his father. And that's how he has the connection to this whole clan. I'm not clear yet.
Yeah.
Just sort of thinking through the pieces here.
Yeah, that makes sense based on what I just said.
Yeah. Yeah. But Uncle George is dead?
Yeah. It looks that way. I gotta think he's gonna pop up in these other in some other episodes, but he definitely died at the end of this one.
Like, he was like, you know, the second main, maybe the first main character, like the most standout character for the through the first two episodes for
me. Do you know what? I figured out finally where I recognize him from. He was Johnny Cochran on.
Oh shit, dude!
This has been killing me. Yeah, the FX.
American Crime Story. Now I have to look it up. FX, O.J. Simpson. We're on our game today, folks. Yeah. We are. American Crime Story.
American Crime Story. Yes. Okay. I apologize. Well, I'll try to read a recap before coming in next week. So
dude, it won't help you. It won't. I mean, it'll help you remember better the events of the actual episode. Yeah. But in terms of, like, knowing what is happening on this show, it's a lot. It's just all of us are skeptical.
Look, I've got an easy scapegoat. All I could remember, aside from George's death, was the painting of the snake penis. That really just took me out of the whole. That is what is, you know, lasered into my brain. The guy about to have sex with the woman with his snake penis.
It's Atticus, right? They're all in their own rooms.
Yeah.
Facing their own versions of whatever it is that these racist wizards want them to see. Mm-hmm. And Letitia's is obviously that she wants Atticus in some way.
Right.
So he has a snake penis in that particular scene.
Oh, he does, yes. But there's the painting.
With the
snake penis.
Yes.
Yeah.
Uncle George saw his dead wife, was it? I believe. I'm trying to recall.
His dead first love. I don't know if they had ever been married or not.
Huh. And then Atticus,
but
we
certainly
see him,
his first big love.
Okay.
Yes.
And then Atticus is just sort of sitting in his room after we watch those other two being like mentally tormented.
And then
has
to kill an Asian woman.
Yeah. Then he has to fight that Asian woman.
And he clearly has some demons from the war.
Where he did horrible
things.
Where
he probably had to kill a woman.
He killed a woman, fought a woman, murdered a woman at some point, and that's obviously haunting him. Yeah, there's a lot going on.
There was a lot going on, yes. And then the whole weird wizard, the racist wizards, which, you know, had some cloaks going on, so there were definitely some KKK parallels and...
weird ones, though? Old KKK fits are so fucking stupid because it's legit just a white sheet and then a pointy cone hat mask. You look like a fucking idiot, and anyone with half of a brain would have seen the first, version of that, like a fucking drawing of that costume, and gone, this is awful and stupid. Well, they've taken it and made it look more wizardy, so it's got like the purples to it, and like it's a dope racist wizard costume. Compared to like the KKK, it was always nice to be able to point at them and be like, you guys can't dress for shit, if nothing else. And that, I don't know, I just saw, it was weird that they've taken it and made it badass. But yes, definitely had the KKK parallels, definitely had all that tied in.
Yeah.
That whole thing was just...
And she even, the woman, the female, the daughter of our current head wizard.
Christina Braithwaite.
She even mentions at one point when Atticus kind of calls them the KKK, that they're not the KKK. They're all too poor to even associate with the KKK.
That the KKK is poor?
No.
Oh. I thought it was that she was calling like the KKK poor white trash that they don't associate with. This is like the rich, wealthy version of like establishing the old ways.
Okay, that makes more sense, but I certainly like heard what she said.
And took it the other way.
Yeah.
That's because this show's confusing as shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's supposed to, again, so it's this is one of those shows where they're doing all of these, like there's obvious elements of fantasy and all these crazy sci-fi things. And it's tied in with, you know, trying to tackle a lot of real world elements. As a result, through your first two episodes, it's not all that shocking that we're both sitting here like, what? What did we just watch? All I know is that there are two ways this can go with shows like this, where you're supposed to be very
confused. A little
confused.
Yeah. Yeah. Or very confused.
Or even just a little. It can be frustrating, maddening, and ruin the story for you. or it can leave you wanting more and curious as to where it will go from here. And I'm in the latter boat with this show still.
Same. And that's actually, again, I'm making excuses here, but I didn't finish the episode and think to myself, man, I got to go to read a recap to figure out what the hell just happened. Because I feel I feel like the overarching, you know, piece of this, that Atticus got together with his uncle and his old friend Letitia to go seek out his dad, who left him some clues as to where he was,
Then they clearly found the room where he was locked
in. They go out there. It's tied to this, to the Lovecraft stories that Atticus really enjoyed. We know that they're going to fight some demons and some racists and some some oppression along the way. We get to this big wizard house. They want to trap these people. They want to use Atticus to get to this paradise thing. He's got some connection to it. And then they figure their way out, and oh no, one of our main favorite characters is dead. I got all that. And so all the little moving pieces and details, I just kind of like...
You're just like, whatever.
I didn't think about until now when we're trying to like suss out the actual plot mechanics of what happened.
And it's difficult.
And it's difficult, yeah.
But it is not like Dark, where I watch an episode and go, all right, I got to go read the four recaps that I'm aware that will help me like get through what I just, which character, what I don't. It's not like that. It's more like, okay, I'm strapped in. I get the big picture. I'm not confused to a place where I'm like, I think there are answers to be found. I think they will give them to me as the course, as the show progresses and becomes, the narrative is drawn out more.
Yeah.
Right now we're just at the front. And, oh, his dad popping out of the ground. Omar from The Wire. So he tunneled out?
I think so.
Okay. He tunneled out. They didn't need to free him.
Right.
But the racist wizards are gone now, or at least their castle. So that's good. And we'll see what happens next week.
We'll see what happens
next. Lovecraft Country Episode 3, where hopefully Barrett and I walk away with a better understanding for big picture. Like, because I'm just right now, I'm like, all right. We were set up episode one with this guy's lost his dad. He needs to find him, and there's some weird shit happening. Well, they found his dad already. Uncle George is dead.
So now that's a great question. I don't know what's coming next.
Yeah. Maybe we never will.
Each episode is going to bring you a totally new obstacle. Because you're right. Like, our initial thing that we were doing with the show was going to find Atticus's dad, and now we got him.
We also know that they have all this information about all these different racist areas of the country and stuff. Like, is that going to continue to tie in?
Right. Could.
We'll see.
Could do.
We'll see. Next week, episode 3 of Lovecraft Country on HBO right here on OCC. Today's episode of which is also brought to you by Lisa, makers of the greatest mattresses in all of the land. I always argue that your mattress is up there with your living room and bedroom televisions in terms of important purchases you'll make from your home for your home. So you have to ask yourself, is my bed kind of crappy? Do I even remember when I got it or where it came from? Do you wake up every morning feeling like you've won the lottery because your mattress is so damn comfortable? I do on my Lisa Legend. I also slept on a Lisa Hybrid, their hybrid mattress, for a few years. As I said many, many times on this show, the most comfortable bed I have ever laid eyes or body on. Got the upgraded Lisa Legend, bumped the Lisa Hybrid into my guest room so that my guests get the best night's sleep they've ever gotten, and I gotta say the Legend, just as incredible, if not more incredible than the Hybrid, all of Lisa's products have been thoughtfully designed to go beyond creating a comfortable bed to transform your bedroom into a sanctuary you want to spend time in. Huge fan of everything they make. I've tried the Lisa Legend I've been sleeping on for months. The Lisa Hybrid is phenomenal. Their pillows are great. Their blankets are great. Everything they make is great, and they believe all people should have access to deep rest and relaxation at Lisa, and as such, they make it easy for their customers to know they've made the right choice through their social impact initiatives tied to each purchase. Lisa donates one mattress for every 10 they sell through organizations that work in causes like foster care prevention. To date, having donated more than 33,000 mattresses through more than 1,000 nonprofits, Lisa mattresses are made in the USA. In-home delivery and setup is available. Financing is also available. Do not miss out, Clam Fam. Live healthier, live happier by resting deep. Order today, and you'll get 15% off any mattress for a limited time at lisa.com/dragon when you use the promo code DRAGON. That's L-E-E-S-A, lisa.com/dragon. Promo code DRAGON, 15% off any mattress right there at lisa.com/dragon. The best, most comfortable beds in the entire world. They show up right to your front door in a box. You open the box. You unbox the mattress. You cut the plastic on the side. You watch it come to life. You slap it on your bed. Boom. Bang. You're getting the best sleep you've ever gotten. Lisa.com/dragon. Moving on. Yellowstone Season 1, Episodes 2 and 3. You and I spent quite a bit of time sort of talking Yellowstone vibes up front.
We did.
I'm going to throw out just a couple points here.
Okay.
Before we open up. Yellowstone vibes involve trucks, big machinery, horses, obviously, cowboys, denim, belt buckles. We get belt buckle action in this one. Guy sits down at the old rodeo where they're watching the cowboys ride the bulls, and he's got his belt buckle. Vests. The vest, which I've never been a vest guy. Show makes me want to wear a vest. Whiskey, tequila, open air, Mother Nature, Father Sky. Also had a couple of points I wanted to throw out. 50% of this family ends up in a life or death situation on a daily basis. The Dutton family constantly in harm's way.
Yeah. Those are just the perils of living the ranch life, Ross.
It's the cowboy mafia life, like organized cowboy crime.
Yeah.
Also, everyone within a 100-mile radius is involved in criminal activity and actively sabotaging any and all active police investigations into the several deaths, natural and otherwise, that occur within this area each and every day.
That is also true.
And Dutton just owns, Big John Dutton just owns everybody. Kevin Costner just got his hand, got his everybody in his pocket.
It would appear that way. Yes.
And if you're not in his pocket, you die.
Or you go to prison.
You go to prison until you give him back his cattle.
Yeah.
This guy has an extreme amount of power.
Yeah, the big lesson from episodes 2 and 3 is, I would say, don't steal John Dutton's cattle.
Definitely not.
And then also, if you do anything bad, then you're going to get burned down in a fake suicide.
Yeah, you don't want to get addicted to cigarettes
fluid,
or joints dipped in embalming fluid.
Right.
That's bad. That's basically PCP. It's called getting wet.
Yeah.
It's a wet-ass doink that guy was smoking. A wad. Man, that had vibes from other shows. That had, like, Breaking Bad vibes to it.
It did.
Like, yeah. A drug addict getting, like, put down was, like, on some real dirty Breaking Bad shit.
It was. It's a, yep.
To sort of jump into episode 2... They find out that based on everything that transpired in episode 1, they're going to have issues with the investigation. That there are crime scene photos that implicate Casey Dutton in a professional style execution of his own brother-in-law. So the whole of episode 2 is really Big John calling in favors, executing moves to ensure that this investigation into this execution of this guy that we saw in episode 1, that it does not come back to him, that it does not come back to the Dutton family or Casey Dutton.
Yeah. Yeah, they're protecting Casey here.
So he has a preacher give a sermon at another investigator's church just to turn him morally, basically saying, like, he makes the lesson, like, don't
rat out your neighbor. Yeah.
Which is not what the Bible version of it was, but it works well for John Dutton here.
It does. I thought that this, I liked what they did here just to show you how far reaching John Dutton's influence is.
Yeah.
But this was also pretty silly that, like, a sermon from this guy
would change him on what was actively happening in his life. And he comes outside and tells the preacher, yeah, you know, sometimes it feels like you're talking directly to me.
Right. That was that was a bit far-fetched, but I appreciate what they were telling us there, which is that John Dutton, like, has tentacles everywhere and will reach and can and will reach anybody by whatever means necessary.
And I will,
but like this dude being like a, you know, a Bible beater or whatever, he's going to be swayed by one sermon from the preacher.
Yes, a stretch, but also commenting on just how much power a preacher, a sermon, a church in this type of community can have over what you would call a Bible beater.
Also fair.
And I just thought it was weird, his recognition of, like, because every church-going person has been to a sermon where they went, God damn it, that felt like it was really aimed right the fuck at me.
Yeah.
That's often their point. They're trying to frame up their sermons in a way that will resonate with the most people. But this was just so on the nose for this particular guy, bearing false witness against thy neighbor, framing that up to like don't rat on John Dutton was just you're right. It was a little silly, but again, point made. John Dutton's reach is fucking bonkers, which is where the comparison to like Succession comes in, right? I don't think there was a character necessarily in Game of Thrones where, I mean, maybe Littlefinger, where you're like, man, this guy's got hands everywhere. Mm-hmm. But John Dutton is like Brian Cox and Littlefinger combined almost. Like, he runs this whole freaking area and knows everybody he needs to know and has all of the bad guys on his side that he needs to have to make sure that any situation comes out sort of benefiting him. Rip Wheeler, their fixer, who is probably the most badass character on the show.
Thus far.
He's awesome, and he, like, dude, he just carries the vibes. Like, everything about him, from down to, like, the way his fucking face and mouth are shaped and the way they move when he talks. Like, I have met so many dudes like this who are just hardened and shaped by the cattle, the cowboy life, the hard-living East Texas or West Texas life, and then they just, you just have that in your attitude forever, and this dude has it. And when he goes and sees that medical examiner who spikes his cigs with embalming fluid.
Yep.
Whew.
Yeah. So
intensity.
That's Cole Hauser that plays Rip Wheeler.
Uh-huh.
And if I had to wager a guess, I would have guessed that Cole Hauser was from and grew up in, or at least grew up in Texas, because he was in Dazed and Confused.
Oh my God.
And he's played other like Texas Rangers in procedural TV shows, like that type of character, like the Southern Texas, like, you know, kind of
rancher,
heavy hitter, police officer, enforcement type.
Dude, I can't believe this is the guy from Dazed and Confused right now.
He's usually like more redheaded in his roles,
yes,
which I think is his natural, and they've darkened his hair.
Very dark.
For this role, probably to make him look, you know,
more menacing. No offense to the gingers out there.
That's correct.
But just frankly, but right, a dark-haired, right, dark mustached and bearded man is terrifying.
But he is not a Texas or a Western guy. I mean, well, I guess he's Western, but he was born in Santa Barbara, grew up in California, Oregon, and Florida. So he just, you know,
done a lot of surfing.
Just a classic case of that of that kind of typecasting of getting in there and kind of ending up as the Texan Ranger badass enforcer dude.
Did you know he was in Too Fast, Too Furious?
So I see that's
Carter Verone.
Under what he's known for, Too Fast, Too Furious. But you know, as the Fast and Furious historian here, I cannot picture his character.
I've got it pulled up, and I mean, this is probably going to help you. Just Google Cole Hauser, Carter Verone.
Yeah.
And I think you'll recall his face.
Yes, yes. Oh, he's like the main bad guy.
Yeah. Buttoned shirt, unbuttoned shirt all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
So he's done some serious work in his day.
He's had a nice, successful career, I would say.
He really has. And my God, does he do a good job of destroying evidence and making sure that
he's great
examiner can't fuck up an investigation.
It's really, he's approaching Ray Donovan levels, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. The only other thing I want to touch on from episode two. So Casey and his wife, Monica, I don't know.
Yeah, wife, yeah.
They're driving down the road and arguing about his plan to head out and do the military thing again because he doesn't know what to do with his life right now. And he thinks maybe that's the answer. And then they're interrupted because a trailer explodes out of nowhere. And he's like, I assume it's a meth trailer. There's a dude bad, very, very badly burned, just like Will Ferrell and Austin Powers. And he has to execute this guy because the ambulance won't be there for 45 minutes. And he thinks this is the way to put him out of his misery. But then you've got the reservation police are the ones coming out to handle this or whatever. And they decide to frame it up like it was the cop that put the guy out of his misery.
Correct.
They switch clips to their guns, yeah, which I'm not. Gun people.
The slide. Yes, thank you. And the slide is what marks the bullet.
I just have trouble thinking it's easy.
Gives it its ballistic mark or whatever. I think.
But like you're telling me, like we could that system seems a little broken. If that's all it takes to flip the fucking who shot who is you switch slides. but whatever. Not a gun guy. Don't know enough about pistols to really speak to that.
Well, no, because the cop now has the slide that marked the bullet.
Matches the bullet that he fired.
Right.
What I'm saying is it can't be that easy, or like I can just commit a murder and then flip the slide on the gun.
But
and,
you're not. But the key part of this is that you're not giving the slide with all the evidence on it to a police officer.
In his report, like, it will all reflect
that slide that you used to do the murder is still out there somewhere.
Not in the hands of a cop who can just say it was me.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Now, of course, but you're hitting on something that is already doable, which is that you can just commit a murder and then like burn your gun.
Sure. Throw it into a river or whatever.
Yeah, but then it's still out there. It would be found.
Yeah, maybe. By some doofus scuba diving in the river.
Ross, I've seen enough dang movies and TV shows to know that that gun is getting found.
That's true. They always find the damn guns that you throw
in
the rivers.
You gotta throw it in one of those incinerators that they throw Lee's body in.
Yeah, poor Lee. Didn't get a real funeral. Goes out the way the horses do.
Mm-hmm.
I love that guy being like, takes it about 45 minutes to incinerate a horse. Never done a human before. Bet she'll have your ashes in about 10 minutes. Good Lord. But what was the deal with the meth trailer? And then like, so he just like, now there's another problem that he was tied to this mercy killing?
Okay. Can we use this to segue into episode 3?
Absolutely.
Okay. I don't totally know what's going on with Casey. This seemed like a boneheaded move to put this guy out of his misery, because I don't really think that is very legal.
You can't just go around shooting people who you think need to be shot because they're dying already.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so even if you are going to do something like a mercy killing for this dude who's badly burned, like, I don't know, maybe just like choke him out or something.
You're like,
I guess that's not as humane as just like the quick death of a gunshot to the head. All in all, I know what you're trying to do there. Like, you think that you're doing the right thing, but that is going to bring you nothing but legal trouble, it would seem. And I don't know why you would do that. To continue this, let's just, you know, we need a new board. Get rid of the Arya kill board, because we are very, very clearly going to need a Casey kill board, because this is 4 dudes through 3 episodes that this guy has murked.
I mean, no one.
He's our main lovable guy, right? He's the one that we kind of empathize with the most. And he's just out here killing people. 4 people in 3 episodes.
He's got to do what he's got to do. But 2 of them were execution style. One of them was to a guy who was very, very badly burned. But it was a mercy execution. But yeah, no, he's having to shoot a hell of a lot of people.
So he's killing Casey is just out there riding around and getting it, and just, he's out there killing dudes.
And
he's got to chill out with that, or it's going to come back and bite him in the ass.
Well, yeah.
Like a rattlesnake hiding in a tube.
Now you stay here, no matter what. And then if you're a good dad, you throw in, unless there's a fucking rattlesnake in here with you, then you bounce.
And also, he told the kid to stay in the truck, and but the kid can't listen to stay in the truck, but now he's definitely going to listen to stay in the tube.
He can't leave the log, Barrett. He's in there, and he can't leave. There's a force field on both sides, just like from Lovecraft Country. He can't exit the log until the rattlesnake is dead. That was incredibly tense. So the third episode, just to get into it, anniversary of their mother's death, right?
Yeah.
So we see how she dies at the beginning, which is that she's not a great horseback. The fucking horse flips her off and lands on her, and she dies. And on the way out, she's like, Beth, this was you. And we very quickly find out why Beth is the way Beth is.
Mm-hmm.
She spends the anniversary of her mother's death showing off her hot, naked body and pounding wine in an outdoor tub. That she has heated. An outdoor hot tub, I guess I should say.
What is a tub and it is hot?
It is. I thought at first she was committing suicide. I thought she was running like an electrical yes. wire to it, and I was like, well, this is tight. She's going to go out there with 2 wine bottles and just fuck
it. It did have that element, yeah.
Yeah. But let me jump to sort of, obviously John has Thomas Rainwater locked up for stealing and not returning his cattle. Rainwater thinks that he himself is like the past and all those past injustices catching up with John Dutton. Dutton just thinks Rainwater is a fraudulent cattle thief, mm-hmm. using his heritage as a means to move himself forward in the world and gain more power and influence, and sticks him in prison because he, again, runs the entire freaking area that we've been introduced to so far. Beth has a hard time, fights her brother Jamie, gets him to punch her. Does she end up banging with the, I guess, enemy at the end? We don't know,
I'm
going to
say no.
Okay. But the other thing that happens is Casey witnesses...
Unless she's going to use that to absolutely, like, burn that dude's life down.
Okay.
Because she has that line in episode 3 where she's basically like, if Dad died tomorrow, I'd sell all my shares to the Four Seasons and get the hell out of here,
and
basically.
And swim in the pool every day.
And swim in the pool every that they build every day, right? Like, yeah. She does not... The only thing that she cares about is basically being her father's
daughter.
You know, right. Yeah. Right, exactly. So
that's all she's got left to her.
So if she did go through with the coitus there with mm-hmm. our developer man,
you think it would be for the purpose of...
Seems to only be for the purpose of having a card to play and really, really screwing that guy's life up and being able to burn the subdivision down.
Gotcha. Okay, so what the hell... Remind me, the little girl that shoots herself at the end, or is she a little girl? Is she a teenager?
She is a mom of all of those poor kids. She's Monica's sister. She's the wife of the brother-in-law that Casey executed.
Well, if you're not watching on youtube.com/bowlingmedia, my jaw just dropped. That looked like a young girl, first of all.
No, that was mom.
Couldn't get a feel for if she was young or if she was the... Okay. So she was in a bad spot. Claimed yeah. she didn't get raped, right? What the hell happened? Why
oh,
she
well, now? Now you're confusing two stories.
Oh, am I?
Yeah.
Okay, help me.
There was the girl that Casey saved from the two whoever those dudes
and
were.
And that is not the same person who shot herself.
No.
Oh fuck!
Yeah.
I'm an idiot. Okay.
No, the Casey's brother-in-law who he had all the weird tension with.
Uh huh.
That was Monica's sister, who was that guy's wife. They had like 6 kids.
Yeah.
Casey murders that dude. Now we're here, however many days later.
She kills herself.
She kills herself because she can't, she can't cope with the loss, I guess.
Now the kids have no parents.
Seems like a pretty selfish act, if you ask me.
It does indeed.
And, but Casey he's entered a new layer of shit with that. When he does finally have to reveal that he was the murderer of brother-in-law man.
Man, that sitch is complicated.
Yes, very.
So who was the little girl he saved from whatever the shit?
So that was she was part of the tribe.
Okay.
Her family lives on the reservation.
Okay.
That's what they talk about. Like they're like, you know, were the dudes... Were they Native American or were they white guys?
Right.
And he was like, well, they care because they don't care about when we disappear. But if they were white dudes, we got to go take care of it.
Right.
And this is the place where you can disappear somebody, basically.
Right.
So
again, dope lines. Paraphrased.
I don't know what those guys were doing, if they were just straight up like kidnappers or if they were more meth guys. With them in their like whitey tighties, it definitely had like cooking meth vibes.
Yeah.
Don't know how the girl had gotten mixed up in that.
Okay.
But so that was another, you know, Casey recognizes that van is doing something sketchy over on the side of the road.
Right.
Goes and checks it out.
Frees the little girl.
Frees her, ends up killing 2 more people. That's looking at the board. Yes, that is 4. That is 4 people through 3 episodes. And then takes her back home. He comes back later. They're going to go dispose of the bodies. And Dad says, like... She wasn't raped.
So it's fine.
So they don't have to go kill all those dudes' family members.
Oh,
They can just kill the souls of the guys, the dead guys.
Okay. So they only have to burn these bodies so that they can't reach the afterlife or whatever. They don't have to go, I think as he put it, like hang every single one of their family members.
Correct.
Great for their family members, frankly.
Yeah, that's exciting.
But yeah, the body count in this show is truly astounding. Like, it is the thing through 3 episodes that I'm like, wow. Mm-hmm. Particularly for Casey, who is our new Arya. But, I mean, in terms of problematic situations, even comparable to Game of Thrones, through three episodes, there are many, 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 many more on Yellowstone. This whole family and everyone surrounding them is just in a constant state of like potential life or death.
Yeah. Yeah. Casey especially, just my man. I don't know. He's just got to chill. He keeps sticking his nose into these situations.
Don't pull over. I'm glad, for every fucking weird car you see.
Yeah, and I'm glad that he saved the girl, obviously.
Obviously.
But, you know, you can't just keep killing people that are doing bad things.
You aren't a cop.
You aren't, right.
This is why he's like, fuck it, I just got to rejoin the military.
Yeah.
Because he can't stop killing people that aren't in the military.
Correct.
Hey,
correct.
What's the name of the guy who they branded in episode one to bring him into the gang?
I think it's Jim.
Jim? Surely it's not Jim.
Or Jimmy? That's what he calls him when he talks to
Jimmy Herdstrom?
Yeah, when he talks to John Dutton in the
I'm looking it up.
Horse stable.
Yep, it's Jimmy. It's Jimmy Herdstrom. So what's going on with Jimmy? Because Jimmy's now, or they make him ride this Bronco for however long.
Jimmy's a new recruit.
Yeah, I know. And they make him go through the new recruit shit. But then he's in the room with like where all the recruits and all the whatever, these grunts sleep.
So, okay. That was kind of a weird scene. You're right. But that's just where, no, that was not, I thought that too.
Not Dutton property.
I thought at first that was like the place where he was. Like, that's where all the new branded
Cowboys
people
sleep.
But then I didn't get that. Then those guys are all talking about how he smells bad. I think that's just like a new living situation that they put him in.
I don't, because they're like, you've got to take a shower. And he's like, fuck you, I'm not taking a shower. And they're like, dude, you're going to take a shower. And then they reveal the brand.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, this is why he won't shower. He has an open freaking wound on his chest. And then the old guy's like, well, fucking me too. And then everybody else in there is like,
oh, shit. Oh,
well, fuck.
Yeah.
So it made it feel like the other guys in there weren't on the same squad.
Correct.
It was just I was like, okay, well, then what is this place?
I don't know what that place was.
What's Jimmy Herdstrom doing?
Yeah.
Guess we'll find out.
Maybe those are other cowboys that are just, that aren't Y-brand click. Or
and
maybe.
This is a cowboy sort of like halfway house or some shit.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, weird situation. Hopefully we find out in episode 4 of Yellowstone, or 5, both of which we'll be covering next week, which will get us through the first half of the season, will it not?
I think this first season is 9 episodes.
Checking.
So we'll be, if we get through 5, we'll be over halfway.
9 episodes indeed. So if we get through 5, we'll be over halfway next week. Very much looking forward to delving further into Yellowstone. For those of you who are on season 2, 3, whatever, appreciate y'all. Hope you're enjoying reliving it with us, and we will get caught up to you one day. For now, for those of you who are where we are, in Yellowstone, holler at us in social media at WR Bolin, at Barrett Dudley on all platforms, and let us know how you're feeling the show so far. I know there are quite a few of you who jumped in when we did, and this is your first time through Yellowstone through 3 episodes. Let us know how you're feeling, as 3 episodes is generally the spot that we give y'all to allow judgment on a television series. And for me personally, I didn't have any doubts with this one. They're 3 seasons deep. We've seen the acclaim. We've seen the critical reviews. We've seen them nominated for shit. We know this show. We knew this show was going to be good, and it's been about what I expected through 3 episodes. I'm not completely blown away to the point where I'm like, "Wow, this is even better than everybody said." I'm also not underwhelmed at all. It's been quite good. I thoroughly enjoy all the killing and the drama and the horses and the scenery and the backdrop of this entire state that we're working with here is incredible. I like all the different things they're playing with, and I'm stoked to see where it goes from here throughout the rest of season 1.
I do think that my favorite part of the show through 3 episodes is simply the setting and the scenery and the
vibes.
And the vibes and the poetry of some of these phrases that they get to spit out.
They do say great
everything
lines.
That comes out of Beth's mouth is just hot fire.
Oh god, yeah, it is.
And then of course, when you talk about the one with the bull riders. He's like, well, actually, the first guy that rode a bull, he might be pretty interesting to talk to. It's the second that you don't want to meet.
Yeah.
Like, anything like that, I'm just all in on.
But we also have grown up hearing, like, sparsely
mm-hmm.
in Texas,
like some just some weird idioms like
you'll get one of those from like a random rancher in a gas station, or like one of your boys in college whose dad fucking actually runs a ranch or something. So when you get hit with those, you're like, oh yeah, that's the good stuff.
It's just as far as, and obviously we're going to continue to get there. I imagine that four and five will probably push our kind of our outside of the family. Like I'm kind of right now, like the family thing is the big deal. Covering up the Casey thing is like kind of the big deal.
You mean covering up all of Casey's killings?
Murders. But I'm actually, what had me hooked earlier was the dynamic between the reservation, the developers, and the Duttons.
And that whole business aspect of it.
Yeah, so I'd like to push forward with like, well, what is Thomas Rainwater, what's his move now? What's his play? What's the developer's?
Because he gives back the cattle.
Yeah, what's the developer's play? Like, how are we going to get these conflicts roiling a little bit more? Sad news is that I think Laura is out on the show, so I'm going to have to find my own time to watch it. She is currently through three episodes having the Breaking Bad issue, where she doesn't really like anybody on the show.
Oh, shame.
Yeah, so that's unfortunate.
That's a shame. That's
a real shame. We'll see.
I like four of the characters at a minimum. Casey, who can't stop killing people, one of my favorites. Beth, who's a degenerate psycho drunk, love her. And then there's John Dutton, who's clearly pulling all the strings.
Yeah.
Like, when I'm watching Succession with Brian Cox's character, I'm like, oh my God, you're just a terrible, terrible human. Holy shit, dude. With John Dutton, I'm like, hey man, it's just Big John. Some bad shit happened to Big John.
Wes Bentley is the only one that kind of sucks. Our lawyer.
Oh yeah. Yeah, he sucks. But Big John's just out there trying to make life right for his family and his children. His wife died in a horrific horse-flopping accident, and he's trying...
Oh, yeah, the horse accident. Beth is being a scaredy cat on the horse, and her mom's like, you got to commit. Look at your brother, my favorite child, having fun on his horse. Look how good he is at it.
You suck, Beth. You suck,
Beth, because you're such a scared little brat.
Yeah.
And then they're like going through the gate, and Beth is scared, and her horse startles, and it startles the other horse,
and it flips the mom off,
throws mom off, lands on her, and I think like breaks her back, basically
crushes her. Anytime blood starts coming out of a mouth, you're in trouble.
Yes,
which is where I thought Letitia was screwed in Lovecraft Country, by the way. Yeah, blood coming out of the mouth, not a good sign. And the mom is like, not to make fun of it, but that scene. The horse flops onto her, and she's almost like, good. Beth, now you'll learn not to be such a fucking pussy. Like, why is she hardcore?
No, she's
like,
very hardcore.
She's almost smiling, and then she's like, Beth, you go fix this. You did it. Now you go fix it. And then she, like, touches the son's face, and she's like, if this is the last thing I ever see, well, that'd be all right with me.
She's hardcore. That actress is Gretchen Mol, who I feel like is called upon to play bitchy moms. She is the bitchy mom in Boardwalk Empire.
One of the bitchiest of all time. She's in fact, the bitchy very inappropriate mom in Boardwalk Empire.
Slash wife in Perry Mason.
Oh, yeah.
She is just, that's who they, speaking of typecast with our man Cole Hauser, she's kind of a little typecast too. It's like, we need a woman that don't take no shit and is kind of mean to her kids.
And's got some dirt on her. How old would you guess Gretchen Mol is?
45.
47, you were close. 47.
Yeah.
That is a well-aging woman.
Sure.
Oh, sure, hon. And I'm betting we see a lot of her in flashbacks.
We got to get some flashbacks. You can't just call in Gretchen Mol for one dang episode, although I guess Perry Mason definitely had her for one episode.
Yeah, but this felt like it was like we're going to get more of the childhood of these kids at different points.
Yeah.
Because we got a young John Dutton. Mustachioed John Dutton.
Oh yeah, that was great. That dude, perfect for young Kevin Costner.
See, things are working out.
Who's that actor? He's in a bunch of stuff.
I bet I can find out real quick, Barrett. I bet I can find out quick. Fastest Wikipedia.
You
draw
think you
in
can find out quicker than I can draw this 38 special on
you? Oh shit, son! Now I'm not confident
because I already got it. I got it out. It's cocked back, and I'm
looking for one that says young John. Found it. Josh Lucas.
Josh Lucas. Yes. Thank you.
Josh Lucas playing young John Dutton. Josh Lucas known from Sweet Home Alabama.
That's right.
Also A Beautiful Mind and Ford versus Ferrari.
Ah.
And that will do it for today's episode of OCC. Huge thanks to our sponsors for today, Felix Gray and Lisa, for supporting the show. Go to felixgrayglasses.com/OCC, lisa.com/dragon. You can also support us directly in exchange for 3 or 4 or some other options on our Patreon now. Exclusive ad-free episodes every week, or a month rather, by going to patreon.com/oystersclamscockles. Go check it out. There's now a tier just to join Movie Club. For example, if you just want to partake in our Movie Club every month, which we did Da Five Bloods this month as our Movie Club, Spike Lee's latest. And what else? Yeah, if you're looking for the episodes that we did throughout the course of August, we started out with our top 5 movies of all time. Both Barrett and I broke down our top 5 movies of all time. Then we did an episode that was called Jason Derulo Wasn't Wrong, where we just talked about trending entertainment news, including Jason Derulo thinking that Cats was going to be a career changer for him. And we took some hotline calls from the Clam Fam and Mollusk Militia, leading to all different manner of discussion on that episode. We did our Movie Club, The Five Bloods.
Coming up this week, Mollusk Militia
Hotline Call Extravaganza.
There's also a tier to just be able to hear that episode now.
You can't contribute. You don't have access to the Mollusk Militia Hotline, but you can listen to the Mollusk Militia Hotline episodes if you just want that, and that's the only extra thing you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Correct?
Yeah.
Check out all the tiers on Patreon, patreon.com/oystersclamscockles. Again, Patreon is just a platform that allows Barrett and I to bring you more content, circumventing the advertising industry. So, sign on now, patreon.com/oystersclamscockles. Just go ahead and join the Mollusk Militia and get everything. Get all,
yeah, get all of it.
4 of those episodes that I just named for August. Enjoy them all. Our top 5 movies of all time, trending entertainment news,
get all
and
of it. Get the
calls.
Discord. Get the phone number. Call in.
Go.
Give us your hot takes. Tell us. You can look, if you've ever had the moment where you're doing the Wayne slamming on the windows thing, yelling at us, either in your car or in your home or wherever, like you probably were today.
Why can't you remember the word?
When we were forgetting how Atticus was related to the, probably related to the Braithwaites. I guarantee you there were some people who were like, it was his mom, he followed her out of the building, you
stupid bastard, you stupid sons of bitches.
You need to join the Mollusk Militia so you can call in and roast us for being doofuses.
And
on the Mollusk Militia
the Discord
hotline, and then get in the Discord and be like, hey, you stupid bastards.
You SOBs. Pull your heads out.
Great episode of Seinfeld where George is dealing with all the guys from the Texas Rangers and the Houston Astros. It's the Astros.
Yes. One of the all-time great scenes in
and
Seinfeld.
And they all just call each other bastards the whole time.
You tell you stupid bastards never come back down to Houston or whatever the line is. There's a great fucking line.
Oh, you tell
that
bastard to go on and never come back to New York City.
And his boss is walking by and hears him like yelling that at them.
Yeah.
You stupid bastards. Yeah, for whatever reason, in that episode, everyone from Texas calls each other a stupid,
stupid,
dumb bastard. Yeah. Patreon.com/oystersclamscockles for more ad-free premium OCC every single month. Follow us on social media on Instagram at oystersclamscockles. We are on Twitter at clamsandcockles, and we are on Facebook.com/oystersclamscockles. You can follow me, Ross Bolin, at WRBOLEN, at WRBolin on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat, and also listen to the Ross Bolin podcast wherever you listen to OCC, or watch it on YouTube.com/BolinMedia, where you can watch every episode of OCC that comes out as well. YouTube.com/BolinMedia if you want to see Barrett and I's shining faces as I wave into the camera and he looks down at his phone menacingly. Barrett, where can we follow you on social media and hear more of your voice?
At Barrett Dudley, Instagram, Twitter. And then you can obviously catch me in the Discord.
The Discord?
And check out the Club Cool podcast wherever you're listening to OCC.
Club Cool.
A little style, we talk a little pop culture, everything in between. Co-hosted with Phil Battaglia. It's a good podcast. It's a good podcast.
It is a good pod. Just another good pod. Another good pod. Club Cool, check it out. Check out RBP as well. And until our next helping, goodbye, friends.